You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only Coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Gal for All Seasons podcast featuring your Gal for All Seasons, Taryn the Coop Cooper. How are you? I'm going to jump right away on the topic of the evening, which is the Mets. Mets, and more Mets baseball. You see, it's been four games. Well, technically, number five is happening right now as we speak. Since the All-Star break officially ended, and two things have happened. You know that June swoon we always talk about? Well, it didn't happen this year, but it seems to be happening a bit in July. It's kind of a curious thing, if you ask me. The other is that the Mets haven't won a damn game since returning. I don't know what the hell's going on. But we're going to talk about all that. You know, if you're following Mets fans on Twitter, you'd think, you know, the end of the world happened. I just think it's just a couple bad games, but that's just me. What the hell do I know? There'll be oodles of storylines here, and tonight I'll be joined by two of my favorite guests, one of which is a new guest, my good friend and former ESPN radio host, Blondie's Jake Stevens, and I'll be joined later by Brian Jora. He's a friend of the show from Mets 360. And without further ado, let me introduce the one, the only, Blondie's Jake. Hey, Jake!
Hey, Coop. Happy to be with you.
Well, you know, this is a long time coming, and I just want to, you know, state for the audience that you and I go way, way back, and we probably have known each other for about 6 years. We've, you know, we met with the cast of characters at the Brooklyn Net fan site, and we've busted each other's chops and have had each other's back ever since. So, you know, I'm really glad that we could work the schedule out and you could come on the show.
And we've road tripped together in San Francisco.
Oh my gosh, how could I forget that? Yeah, I was just talking about that the other day. That you know, Ed and I, my husband, we had our honeymoon in 2010, and like any good Mets fan couple, we followed the Mets on our honeymoon out to the West Coast. So how romantic! But you know, there may be some similar undertones between that series and what's going on with the Mets now, and I hope to be able to address some of that with you. I for one, I'm refusing to drink the Kool-Aid and, you know, jump off the bridge. I just feel like, you know, this is just a really rough patch. This happened anytime else, maybe, but I just think it's a little obvious because, you know, they lost the last game going into the All-Star break. You know, they have a significant losing streak, but, you know, let me just back up here. That 2010, there was a lot going on. It seemed like, you know, that the Mets were, you know, kind of just, you know, playing above their head, and then they kind of crashed down to earth, and it happened to coincide with when Carlos Beltran returned, and he got an unfair amount of blame for that swoon. But now, you know, fast forward two years later to now, and we've just got, you know, not exactly the start that we want to see from the All-Star break. And, you know, with any grassroots movement like the social media and blogging world, there's going to be a lunatic fringe. And we're here at July 17th. Yeah, we know the bullpen sucks. There are some significant players that aren't coming through, runners in scoring positions, situational hitting, that type of thing. You know, the pitching is kind of coming down to earth. I mean, R.A. Dickey's had, you know, kind of, you know, two lackluster starts in a row, and he's been kind of the stalwart of the staff. But is the vocal minority correct, Jake? I mean, is this season just, you know, getting out of hand, and is it essentially done?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'll take a cue from you, and I'll go back a few years. There were great expectations for this team when they made their run in the late part of the first decade of the 2000s. And then there were questions, and we wondered, and we hoped, and we thought this team would be good, and then they seemed to fall flat in the second half. This team mm-hmm. came in with, I'd argue, as low expectations as we've seen in almost a decade for a Mets team. Nobody thought this team was going to go anywhere. And when I say nobody, I know there were a few people, but realistically, they were picked last by most of the quote-unquote experts. And, you know, most people looked at this team and said, well, it'll be a good year if they reach 500. Well, they're over 500. And it's already been a really, really great year. Not a good year, a great year as a Mets fan. Without expectations, you've seen the return of Johan Santana and the first Mets no-no in the team history. You've seen R.A. Dickey throw a fantastic first half and look like the greatest pitcher on the planet at times. You've seen David Wright return to an all-star form. You've seen Ike Davis now coming back and showing what he was doing before that collision behind the mound. I mean, you've got so many positives for this team. So I think the first thing I have to say is that for people to go crazy about what's happening now, this team is playing about where it should be playing realistically. We knew the bullpen was probably going to be a struggle. They made some moves. I know people are crazy about Sandy Alderson saying, well, he was supposed to fix the bullpen. Well, the bullpen is the hardest thing to fix in baseball because all these guys are guesswork. If they're not named Mariano Rivera, you're guessing and hoping. But I would say this. The way this team has battled, I don't think they're done. Do I think they make the playoffs as constituted? No. But I think people ready to jump off that, you know, the cliff or whatever, not me. Not me. I'm still enjoying the season, and I think everybody should take a step back, not only from the ledge, but just to a perspective point with this team and say, you know what, this has been a fun year, and even if they don't have a monster second half, that's okay. This is a young team. It's not a team that sees its window closing.
Right, right. You know, I'm in total agreement. I probably, like many fans, just had incredibly low expectations coming into 2012. You know, but I said that I was dead wrong on a lot of things. For one, I wasn't expecting much from the starting pitching. I actually thought that the bullpen was going to be a little bit stronger. I thought that Alderson had made some good moves for the bullpen this year. You know, little did I know that, A, as you mentioned, the first no-hitter in Mets history would be thrown by Johan Santana, who essentially missed well over a year pitching. And then, you know, R.A. Dickey, who is really just the toast of MLB. He's been on Dave Letterman. He's being featured in a major motion picture film. It's just, he's everywhere you look, and it's because of his eccentric pitch, the knuckleball. The knuckleball is just everywhere. And, it, you know, we've even saw Dillon G. Who knew that an injury to Dillon G would really rock the pitching rotation to what it is now. You know, conversely, I'm not really a big fan of bringing Matt Harvey up. I guess, you know, being a Mets fan, I'm just a little gun shy. I know his situation is a little bit different being in the minors, but I'm not really a big fan of bringing up a minor league arm just for the sake of saying, well, you know, let's please the fans. And that's kind of, you know, where I wanted to go next was with with Sandy Alderson. You know, I don't necessarily call myself the number one Kool-Aid drinker for Alderson, but I do agree with how he's handling the team. I have a philosophy that I'd rather lose with the young guys than, you know, lose with overbloated, overpaid contracts and veterans who just didn't give a crap. At least you know you're going to see a good game. And like you said, we're really enjoying what we're seeing this year. And if we had heard earlier on, hey, you know, if the Mets are going to be over 500 after All-Star break, you take it, right? Of course. So there's always, you know, just something to it when you see big picture. And I think a lot of people are just willing to jump off the cliff. But let me get back to Alderson. We're approaching the trade deadline. And like you said, the Mets have been playing over expectation. But some people, and I tend to agree with this, is that if the Mets keep losing, that might make Sandy Alderson's decision-making a little bit easier going into the trade deadline. So if you're Sandy Alderson and, you know, the Mets keep playing the way that they have been, are you a buyer or seller at the deadline?
Well, I don't think there's any reason for Sandy Alderson to be a seller of any kind unless they completely tank and you think you can get guys who may step in next year for, say, somebody like a Chris Young, who's unfortunately always an injury waiting to happen, or you think that you can get a serious bunch of blue chips, which I don't think will happen, for a Johan Santana. Otherwise, you're not moving John Neese, and you're not moving R.A. Dickey, because he throws a knuckleball, so what's the big deal? You're not moving David Wright. You're not moving Ike Davis. Who is it that people think that this team is going to move as a seller? I don't understand. I wouldn't want to give up any of the young core I'm not really sure who the veteran, maybe a Scott Hairston, I guess, but I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and I like the way he's played, but I wouldn't, I just don't see the Mets having that much to sell. Having said mm-hmm. that, I look at what Alderson did. Remember, again, and I say this, and this is not a cop-out. I know people say, well, Alderson, his only thing was, well, Ramon Ramirez has pitched spectacularly out of the pen for about 5 years, and he was awful. And John Roush has been pretty good, and he had a great start this season, and then he completely fell apart. And Tim Burdack pitched well, and then he fell apart. You can say, well, Alderson didn't make the right moves, but as I always tell people, look around the league and tell me who are the guys who are available that have been lights out and have been so good that the pen would be so great. So I just think it's a bit of nitpicking when I ask people, well, who would you have taken? There's not really a whole lot to answer there. Now, on the other side of it, let's say the Mets are winning. Let's say they're still within reach of the wild card. I don't have a problem trying to bring somebody in who, you know, a relief pitcher who maybe needs a new place to find home, and maybe it works out. But I would not give up. I mean, if you give up any of the top prospects on this team, then you're insane. I mean, really, that would be a terrible move. You're not giving up Wheeler, Harvey, any of those guys to get anybody in the pen, because, frankly, this team is at one piece away right now. So I don't see them being a huge buyer. But if you can find a guy who, you know, maybe you pick up a little bit of salary and he's somebody you can throw in there and hope you catch lightning in a bottle. And I hate to side with Mike Fatsessa, but I saw him part of his show today, and he was quoted, you know, as saying, you know, yeah, I would do that if you're still within reach, but there's no need to make a big move because you've got arms coming on the way. You've got more position players that have had an opportunity this year and have done some things. How good are they going to be? We don't know. Is Jordani Valdes being going to hit pinch hit 3-run homers every night? You know, how good is he going to be as a full-time player? We don't know, right? But I don't see a lot of movement because I don't see where this team, makeup-wise, makes sense for a lot of movement. And the other one I hear is, you know, people saying, well, Duda isn't, you know, Duda would be a good first baseman. He's the guy, I guess, if you thought you could get back a power-hitting regular outfielder for a team that need a first baseman. I like the guy, but I guess I could sort of understand that. But beyond that, I just don't see a whole lot of movement. And I like the way the team has gone. I like the fact that I was one of the biggest supporters of Carlos Beltran, but it made sense to move him. And I loved Jose Reyes up until he A, dropped down a bunt, and then B, took himself out of the game. I'm still bothered by that, but I'll leave that alone for a second, I promise. But, I mean, do you hear anybody clamoring for Jose this year? Because Tejada has played very, very well. He's already mimicked Jose by going on the DL with a leg injury, but, I mean, he's played well. His on-base percentage is good. I mean, I like the way the team has gone, so I'm just not sure where would be the major issue that you would look to either take apart this team or try to find new places that you could add parts, because I think you have parts in place that are potential. The one glaring spot is another power hitting outfielder, and those are guys that you try to find in free agency. It hasn't happened with Jason Bay. We all understand that. Nobody's going to take his contract, but you'll find somebody else in that spot because those are the easiest to find, are power hitting outfielders compared to every other spot in the diamond.
You know, I'm in total agreement with you. I can see, you know, a little bit of a hybrid. They're not going to be, you know, big swinging dicks in the buyer-seller championships in, you know, at the trade deadline. I can see maybe selling off a piece like, as you mentioned, like a Chris Young to a contending team that may need an extra arm. You know, something that I've discussed is, you know, if the Mets make the second wild card, which we know is a long shot, it could happen, but somebody like a Chris Young could theoretically operate out of the pen as a long arm for a playoff-bound team. And somebody like a Scott Hairston, who's been a tremendous bat off the bench, and he's really filled in for, you know, who the hell knows what the hell happened to Jason Bay. But I think, you know, like you said, trading youth away, I don't really see, you know, trading a Wheeler or a Harvey or any of those guys for a short-term fix. It's not going to be, you know, a Kazmir for Zambrano situation. So I agree. I think, you know, it's holding on to the youth is kind of important. But, I mean, the bullpen is a big shit sandwich, and you did mention you always do play devil's advocate, and I do admire that about you, is that you always kind of stand firm with, you know, well, who else is out there? And, I mean, I have to kind of laugh when I see people on Twitter saying, well, you know, K-Rod might be available. I'm like, are you kidding me? We've been there, done that. We have the mugshot. People couldn't wait for him to, you know, cart his ass out in New York, and now they want him back? What the hell? Are we that desperate?
You know, and it has become that desperate a situation, which is kind of sad. And I confess, I was watching last night, and I thought to myself, and Gary Cohen was going nuts on the broadcast, saying how big, you know, Valdez Bean's homer could be, and this could be a huge changing point in the season. And unfortunately, it was another crushing, painful defeat. But I'll say this. I know a lot of people, I don't know if the right word is hate Bobby Parnell, but they kind of dread him, and they don't think he's right for the closer spot. I didn't get a chance to see the game in Atlanta. I was told that they were ground balls that just found holes. I will say this, last night, I was upset about a couple of things, and I think the Mets don't, and I don't know whether to blame it on pitching coach or catchers or whatever, but here's the deal. Bobby Parnell last night was blowing guys away with curveballs.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a two-strike count on a guy who clearly is baffled by the curveball. They haven't seen Bobby Parnell throw a curveball.
Right,
and even
right.
Ron Dolan said on the broadcast, well, you know, here's where you throw a fastball. But Josh totally set up a normal position. He didn't set up high. Bobby Parnell, we've all seen, can throw 100 miles an hour, but it's a laser beam straight. And if you are on it, you drill it. And if he's going to throw it, he's got to throw it upstairs to a guy who's a punch and duty hitter. Otherwise, snap off another curveball. And I don't understand. I feel like they don't use him properly, and I don't like the pitch calls with him. I think he's a quality arm. Maybe he's not your closer, but I just feel like his fastball, they have to gear for it. His secondary pitches are pretty good. Use those. K-Rod, you know, for all the talk about him, K-Rod got by mostly after his first couple of years. He got by with his curveball because his fastball wasn't as fast, and he didn't locate it that well. Well, Parnell doesn't locate that well. That's his problem. When he amps it up, he does not locate well. And I listen to people, 100-mile-an-hour arms don't grow on trees. They got to keep working with this guy. But, you know, would it be nice to have a closer that you expect to be able to come in and close the door, and would it make a big difference? Yeah, but they don't grow on trees. I just think that the get rid of Bobby Parnell crowd just makes me laugh because the guy's showing, he showed me last night, a better curveball than I've ever seen him I've never seen him throw, and he was throwing them consistently. Lord only knows why they felt the need to throw a fastball, because if he throws another curveball, the Mets win that game. I really wholeheartedly believe that. But, you know, we don't know what would have happened. But I don't like the rap that he takes. I still think he's a young kid who's learning, and it's not like he's been in the majors for 10 years, and this is what's always going on. And he's shown flashes. So give the kid an opportunity and see what happens. And not to mention that the offense has blown all sorts of opportunities to start the second half. The game against the Braves, it was just brutal. And the games that they, last night, they could have tacked on runs, and they could have tied the game earlier. And, you know, they've made some mistakes. But I will say, again, Terry Collins has done a terrific job of getting this team ready to play. He said all the right things. I think he gets as much out of the players as you can. I'm not his biggest fan tactically all the time, but I think he's kind of the right fit for this team, and I think the key is just to stay the course with this group and, you know what, accept the fact that you better score more runs because your bullpen's going to give some up. It's just going to happen.
Right, right. And you know what, you actually brought up, I could have been saying all of that, what you were just saying, I'll start off with you know, you and I have had some disagreements in the past, but we're still friends. But you know, I famously said, "Jake, you ignorant slut," and you know, it's all in good fun. But you and I are on the same page with a lot of things. For one, Bobby Parnell, I'm in total agreement. He's young. 100-mile-an-hour pitchers don't grow on trees. Yes, I know he's kind of like the Pedro Serrano of pitchers. You know, Pedro Serrano could hit, you know, the straight ball very much. And, you know, Bobby Parnell, his straight ball gets hit very much. But the curveball was absolutely baffling. So I'm with you. Like, for me, Dan Worthen is the worst piece of space that's being taken up on the coaching staff right now, because if you look at the young arms, you look at Jonathan Neese and you look at Dylan G. And these guys, you know, Dylan G and John Neese both have a lot of upside. John Neese has been with the team off and on since, since 2008. And, you know, mostly his issues are conditioning issues. And I wonder, you know, he's got like that heart defect, whatever. Wonder how much of it has to do with that. That's beside the point. He's pretty much stayed the course. You see flashes of brilliance with Jonathan Neese. But I have to wonder how much of it is the pitching coach's call or the fact that the Mets don't – I know that there is a faction that loves Josh Cholley. They, you know, he can catch the knuckleball, whatever. You know, these guys, at the end of the day, they're professional. And we don't have a real catcher behind the plate. That's a problem. And why, like you said, why they didn't, you know, keep playing the hot hand with Bobby Parnell's curveball was beyond me. And they could have easily won that game last night, as well as, you know, the Mets have been squandering a lot of opportunities with situational hitting. And I know that's not something that can be easily trained, but like you said, anything can happen. They just need to score some runs because they know that the bullpen is going to give up some runs. So, you know, I'm in total agreement there with you.
And they, frankly, Coop, they could be, and probably should be, at least 2-2, and maybe even 3-1 coming out of the break, and everybody would be just absolutely dancing on their heads, thrilled. And It hasn't happened because of that, because of those both those combinations. You can't just say, well, the bullpen didn't get it done when your team loses 2-1 or 3-2 or whatever, you know, and you've had opportunities and don't cash them in. So I think it's, you know, and when you know that's the case, you know, you've got to take advantage of all those opportunities, or else it does get squashed back at you. And if I can just say, when we argue, it's usually when you get loud and you become the Koopanatrix. you start cracking that whip, and then I run for cover. But it's good to know that that's still there. That's still part of you. So
no, it's still there. But you know, I think that I've really just had enough with. I haven't even like really been that present on Twitter because of the lunatic fringe that I just see. Like I feel like I'm kind of screaming in a very loud room, and no one's listening. But you know, I mentioned you and I go way back. And you mentioned Terry Collins, and, you know, I'll wrap up after this, but, you know, you and I have been around a long time, and we became friends under the Baseball Intellectually Challenged Willie, which is a Blondie's Jake original, and then Jerry the Genius, another Blondie's Jake original. But, you know, I know that you said you're not the biggest fan of Terry Collins. I happen to like TC. You know, I think that the players have responded. I think he's the right guy right now. But, you know, what is your feeling on him versus the other two managers that, you know, talk about squandering opportunities. Those guys had a shitload of talent and did absolutely nothing with it.
Okay, well, if you want to compare TC to Mick Willie and JTJ, then it's, you know, this fight has to be stopped in the first round. But in all seriousness, no, I there's two parts to managers, and it reminds me a little bit of, and I know people go crazy, so I hope they just relax and hear me out. But Terry Collins right now at this stage of his career reminds me of Joe Torre with the Yankees in terms of. He knows the temperament of his players. He seems to know when to say something. He knows how to talk to the media. He knows when to get loud. And he's done a very good job of getting the most out of his team. I also didn't want Joe Torre making decisions in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, and especially with a National League team. I'm just not the biggest fan of how Collins has juggled players, has made some decisions. I'm just not sold on that. But I am ultra, as you've seen before, I am ultra, ultra picky with managerial moves, with sacrifices when there don't need to be, with not making the matchup moves that make complete sense, and then you do the same exact thing the next day, even though you said that this is why you saved the pitcher. I mean, those are the sort of things that drive me bonkers, because once the team is ready to play, that's your job as the manager, is to A, argue calls, and B, figure out what matchups you want and how you want to prepare your team in the late innings. And I'm just not the biggest fan of his, but I will agree with you. He's the right guy at the right time right now. I have no problem with him. You know, I'm not calling for his head. I'm just saying I don't love his X's and O's all that much. I don't know enough about Dan Worthen, so as far as I'm concerned, if you say ship him out, I say ship him out. That's fine with me. We'll agree on that. And but overall, the last thing I'll say, and I know you've got another guest coming, and I know there's more talk about this, but I just want to say I have thoroughly enjoyed this season. I posted this today. It's been a great season. There's so many reasons to be so excited about this team. And even if they tank, which I don't think they'll do, but even if they tank, there's reason to have great optimism for the first time in a while for the team that's going forward and for the future of the Mets, with young players, with homegrown talent, and with opportunities for guys around the field in all sorts of positions. You don't look and go, they need five guys. They don't need five guys anymore. They need a couple, and they need to revamp the bullpen, and they're going to compete.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you're not ready to jump. I'm not ready to jump. It's hard to believe that after all these years, you and I are the same ones. But I do have my next guest in the queue. So why don't you round up and say, you know, where the audience can find you?
Well, folks can follow me on Twitter at There It Is Jake. My blogging career has slowed, but thereitisjake.com will eventually rise again. And otherwise, you can find me back here with the Koopanatrix anytime she wants me, and anytime you you need anything about it, and anytime people want to talk Mets, I am there for you. And gosh, I sure hope they win tonight.
Yeah, you know what, I do too. And you know what, you were a great guest. You were welcome on anytime, my friend. And yeah, maybe during football season, because I will be talking football this year too.
Oh, do I have to suffer with the Jets, 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 Jets again? I root for all the wrong teams, Coop.
I know, I do too.
It's a painful life. Have a great show, Coop. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jake. And you are listening to the Y'all for All Seasons podcast here on the NZB Media Sports Network on blogtalkradio.com. I'm the Coop, and you just heard Blondie's Jake. He's been an awesome, awesome friend of mine. And beer, wings, and cheese fries are good. That's also a Blondie's Jake original. My next guest is in the queue. He's been waiting very patiently, and I can't wait to talk to him. It's my friend from Mets360.com, Brian Jorah. And hey, Brian.
Hey, TC. How's it going?
It's going well. I thank you for your patience. Jake and I got a little carried away, but you know that's what happens. He and I go way back, and we haven't actually talked in a while. And he shows up on Twitter the other day. I went, "Oh my goodness, you have to come on my show. We need to talk Mets." And you know, I know that you're very very active with the Mets writing and the Mets blogging, and I haven't had you on a while. So you know, why don't you bring us up to speed with what your site has been doing recently?
Well, I think all of the Mets bloggers are really having a good season so far. There's just been a lot of renewed interest. I think a lot of people are getting behind this team and like the fact that it's homegrown, and certainly the fact that some people were predicting 100 losses at the beginning of the season for this team, and it's been anything but that. So it's really been good news for the most part. Now, of course, here lately with the post-All-Star game slump, and which actually even started a few games before the All-Star, you have some people who are a little bit nervous. But I think that one thing that Terry Collins has definitely shown in his favor is that he's been able to right the ship and make sure that things don't fall apart when they look their worst. So hopefully Collins can continue that trend and move things forward.
Yeah, you brought up an interesting point about Terry Collins because, you know, I feel, and Jake and I kind of talked about this, is that I feel like he's the right guy right now, and the young players seem to really be responding to him. And I think, you know, if you remember last season, Mets were, they looked really checked out when they were playing, and he called them out on it and said, you know, this isn't going to stand with me. And, you know, they started really upping their game. And even, you know, some of the games that they were losing, there was still a little bit of fight, and you can still see that. You know, and I'm with you. As a blogger, and this year was a little bit of a change for me personally because I'm not just blogging about the Mets. I'm blogging about all of my sports teams. And hockey actually took a lot out of me. But Johan Santana's no-hitter just brought me back. And, you know, and it was really just the year of the pitcher with R.A. Dickey and all that. So, you know, I'm going to start with one of the questions I asked Jake, and I'm just going to throw it back to you. you know, and coming into 2012, and like you said, you know, a lot of us are really just enjoying the ride right now. We had, but many of us had very, very low expectations coming into this. I'm not going to say that I thought that there was going to be 100 losses. I thought 500 might be, you know, might be doable personally. But, you know, we always kind of saw 2012 as the transitional year. We're going to lean on a lot of the young homegrown guys. But, you know, if the Mets keep playing the way they do, and I think, you know, we were just talking about how there's a little bit of panic mode going on with some of the fans. If you're Sandy Alderson at the deadline, are you buying or are you selling?
Well, hopefully he's not going to wait until the actual deadline. Because if they're going to be buyers, they needed to have done it a week ago. You know, last year at the All-Star break, Alderson, he moved decisively and traded Francisco Rodriguez during the All-Star break. And I was kind of hoping that he would go in reverse and acquire a pitcher at that point, because we certainly needed one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the fears that I have right now is that we have these games that are winnable, and our pen, for whatever reason, is not getting it done. And I think just the fact of trying to go out, and, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice a top prospect. I mean, just get us a new body so that we're just not so disgusted with the same
mm-hmm.
guys failing on a seemingly nightly basis.
Right, right. I'm in agreement, because I know that, and, you know, Jake and I were actually just talking about that earlier, about how the bullpen is. And the bullpen can easily be those hit or miss arms that are there. And I had to laugh the other day, because some people were actually kicking the tires around bringing Francisco Rodriguez back, and I'm like, we couldn't wait to run him out of town. And now people are saying, well, you know, maybe he wasn't that bad. And you know, there are just a lot of warts and all dealing with the bullpen. But I think, you know, I don't really see Alderson being the high roller that I think people want him to be. I mean, yeah, would we like to see the Mets in the playoffs? Of course we would. But it's really, you know, not part of the, you know, the short-term plan. It's definitely part of the long-term plan, I believe. And trading someone like, you know, like a Scott Hairston, you know, to maybe a playoff contender, or, you know, some change of scenery. I don't know what the hell they're going to do with Jason Bay, to be honest with you. And I happen to be a Jason Bay supporter. You know, I want him to do well. You know, the team would be served if he did well, and he's just not. So, you know, I don't really see him, you know, in a panic, not so much a panic mode, but last year he traded Carlos Beltran, which was the right move at the right time. I really don't see him in a position this year, which is a very good thing, where he's going to have to consider trading a Wright or a Santana. And I think that's really telling about where this team is going in the future. So I'm, you know, I'm really hopeful about that.
Well, getting back to K-Rod for a second. Last year, the reason that people were so eager to get rid of him was just because of that poison pill vesting option that his contract had. And
mm-hmm.
the Mets didn't do anything to try to manage his games finished, which is what the option triggering clause in the contract was. They were letting him close out games that he wasn't going to get a save for. They were bringing him into to games that maybe they could have used another reliever. And so they pretty much backed themselves into a corner. I think it's what they wanted to do anyway. But they
mm-hmm.
certainly didn't make it any easier for them. And this year, K-Rod doesn't have that clause. And
mm-hmm.
I think that if you look at K-Rod's career with the Mets, his first season, his first half of the year was great. And then after the All-Star break, he was just absolutely terrible. But after that one half season, if you take that out of what he did with the Mets, he was fine. And I would certainly
mm-hmm.
welcome that player back with open arms. Right now, the problem with K-Rod is, I mean, he's got an $8 million contract, and of course that would be prorated, but still you're probably talking somewhere about $3-3.5 million for the remainder of the season right now. And,
right.
You know, it's an open question. You know, we've heard all along that the Mets have the ability to add payroll, and, you know, we're going to find out, you know, just how true that statement was. You know, at one point we were going to have a payroll between $110 and $120 million, and that one didn't turn out to be true either. So, you know, it would be nice if we just had some you know, I don't know if accountability is the right word, but just a little honesty. It's like, can we add $3 million in payroll or not? Because I would have to think that if the Mets were willing to pick up the remainder of K-Rod's contract for this year, that the Brewers would not want any kind of significant prospect. I mean, maybe we can give him Danny Herrera back, you know, and do the reverse of the trade that we did last year. So, you know, it'd be real interesting to see. You know, and Houston Street's another guy, I think, a similar type contract situation. And, you know, he's already got his yearly injury out of the way. So hopefully he'd be able to go for the rest of the season. But they certainly need somebody in that class.
Right. And, you know, another name that I hear, you know, the tires being kicked around on is a Jonathan Broxton, who, you know, apparently needs a change of scenery out of Kansas City. I mean, definitely, you know, the bullpen is just this ginormous shitstorm, and nobody really likes seeing them come in late in the game, especially in a tight situation. But, hey, you know what, I would really like to see, you know, like an act of faith. I don't need, you know, a top name like a K-Rod, but, you know, just something to kind of, you know, plug in some kind of hole. You know, we were talking about Bobby Parnell earlier. What are your feelings on Parnell?
Parnell is who we thought he is. He's a guy who can strike out a lot of guys, and that certainly has value. But he's also a guy that when the other team puts the bat on the ball, they end up with hits a large amount of time. And, you know, that hasn't changed. I mean, that's pretty much been his pattern throughout his career with the Mets. And, you know, it's a good with the bad type of thing. And clearly he's not cut out to be a closer. I think he's a very good seventh, probably a tolerable eighth inning guy, but just not the kind of guy you want in the ninth inning of games, closing out games for you. And Parnell has done, I think, everything that we could have hoped that he would do. He added the pitch. He added the, you know, I don't know, some people call it a knuckle curve, other people just call it a curve ball, but he added that breaking ball in the offseason, and that's been pretty effective for him. The trouble is that, you know, maybe he doesn't use it as much as he should. You look at last night's game, when he threw the breaking ball, he was successful, and the hits came on the 98-mile-an-hour fastball. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, maybe stop trying to light up the radar gun, sacrifice a few miles of velocity for a little more movement. I mean, I don't know. Perhaps if we had a better pitching coach, we could come up with an answer.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of at my wit's end with Dan Worthen as it is. I'm not his biggest fan. You know, I happen to be, I see something in Bobby Parnell, and I'd like to, you know, like you said, maybe sacrifice a little bit of the velocity. You know, get the batters a little in a kerfuffle, if they will, because I, like I said earlier, he's kind of like the Pedro Serrano of pitchers. Instead of Pedro Serrano hitting the straight ball very much, Bobby Parnell's straight ball gets hit very much. So that's something to take into consideration. But like I said, I'm just not the biggest Worthen fan, and I really think some of the pitchers are being, you know, underutilized. But, you know, I actually wanted to, before we wrap up in the next few minutes, I wanted to bring up a piece that you wrote recently, and I think it was about 2 days ago, about who is more valuable, Ronnie Cedeno or Mark Quintanilla or Justin Turner. And it looks like one of the decisions was actually made for you because Quintanilla was DFA'd with the reactivation of Jason Fay. But, I mean, I found it very curious that that those three were singled out, you know, because it seems like, you know, that Lucas Zuda, you know, is often thrown out there as someone who could be an odd man out, maybe a change of scenery slash AL guy slash a place that he could play first base a little more effectively because he is completely lost out there in right field. Or even someone like a Daniel Murphy who is having a somewhat decent defensive season at second base. You know, he was slumping a little bit there for a bit, but I just found it curious that you picked those three out. Now, you know, was there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, if you just looked at the way that the roster had shaped up at the time that was written, the Mets had, you know, not traditionally, but I guess what's commonplace right now as far as the lineup is you have 12 pitchers and 13 hitters. And the Mets were carrying at the time 14 hitters and 11 pitchers. They were doing without a pitcher because of G's injury and also the fact that they had the off day on Monday, so they didn't really need a starter since they were still using Batista out of the pen. So they were carrying the extra hitter. And then, you know, the typical thing has two catchers, six infielders, and five outfielders. And the Mets were carrying eight infielders at the time. So pretty much the idea was that they were going to get rid of an infielder just because you can't carry eight infielders unless you have somebody that you're extremely confident in playing the outfield. And they've used Valdez being in that way, and that's certainly something that's going to add to his case to be able to stay. But, you know, it still seemed to make sense when they only had four outfielders and Duda was kind of day-to-day at the time that they weren't going to get rid of an outfielder at that point in time.
Right, right. Okay, now that cleared things up for me. Now, all right, final words. Are you ready to jump as a Mets fan? Are you ready to jump off that bridge yet?
Well, you know, this year is playing with house money. You know, I don't think that anybody, if they're being honest with themselves, would say that they thought that the Mets were going to be in the playoffs this year. I think what's frustrating for so many of us is that it was clear what our weaknesses were, and I think that we did have the ability to make a deal and address those weaknesses, and to this point in time, we haven't done that. Now, one of the problems is with the extra wild card, there's many more teams who feel that they're in the playoff chase maybe than this time last year, so there's many more buyers than there are sellers, and I'm sure that that's part of the problem. But also, I think that maybe we're overvaluing our prospects a bit too much. Certainly, you don't want to trade Wheeler or Harvey or Nemo or, you know, any of the top half. But even though our depth is very, very good, I mean, certainly if we're talking about somebody who's one of our, you know, rated 6 or 7 or below prospects, I don't think that we should be scared to deal somebody like that, because I do think that we have fairly good minor league depth at this point. So, I mean, I'd like to see, you know, the Mets be a little more aggressive in making a transaction to bolster their bullpen. But I think that's only part of the equation. I think they also need to do a better job of in-game managing. And you know, I'm a fan of Collins, and I'm not sure if who's to blame for this, if it's Collins or Worthen. But I'm really not a fan of the way that the bullpen has been managed. And, you know, it's bad enough that we have the Tim Burdick, who can only go for one or two batters at a time or else he explodes. But it seems like we're trying to turn our other relievers into that as well. And then two nights ago, where Ramon Ramirez came on, retired the first two batters that came up. They pinch hit at a lefty, so they immediately yanked him from the game. And one of the calling cards for Ramirez when they acquired him was that he was, you know, better than average at getting out opposite-handed batters, in this case lefty batters. And then now we've forgotten all about that. So, you know, I don't think everybody has to be managed to the way that Burdick does. And I'd like to see, you know, pitchers be able to give us one inning. I don't think that's too much to ask for. I think that we should expect John Roush to be able to give us an inning of time. And the same thing goes for Ramon Ramirez. And I think that if Collins wasn't so eager to get the platoon advantage, that it would do the bullpen a lot better.
All right, fair enough. Well, you know, why don't you round up with the audience where they can find you, and we'll take it from there.
Well, the blog is Mets360.com, and, you know, we have new content on a daily basis, 2, sometimes 3 new articles a day, and it's not just me. There's half a dozen different people writing for the site, so you get lots of different viewpoints, and, you know, we're proud of it, and would encourage all of your listeners to come by and check us out and say hi.
All right, great. Yep, and it's one of the best sites out there, so I vouch for it. It's got the Coop seal of approval. But Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show short notice. I really appreciate it, and let's go Mets.
Let's go. Let's take this series with the Nationals and get back on track.
Yep, absolutely. All right, thanks, buddy. Bye. All right, and that was Brian Jorah from Mets 360, and I'm the Coop, and I'm out of here. You listen to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on NZB Media Sports on blogtalkradio.com. You can find me at my blog, galforallseasons.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Coops22, COOPZ like zebra, 22. And you can also find me on YouTube. I haven't done a video in a while, but trust me, they're funny. And I'm not ready to jump yet. So Mets fans, take heart. Even if the losing streak keeps on going, the season is a lot of fun. And if you blink, you might miss it. And it'll be October, and you'll still miss it. Peace out, y'all.